Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Anyone who's got one knows it. Teenagers are different than adults. Their enthusiasm, mood swings, and navel-gazing are legendary. It turns out there's a good reason for that. According to biologist and science writer David Bainbridge, their brains are just about exploding, in a good way. Bainbridge is the author of the book Teenagers: A Natural History. He told Steve Paulson that a prolonged adolescence is unique to humans and one of our greatest evolutionary advantages.
I think they're unique in human life. I think many of us knew that, but they're also unique in the whole scheme of things. One of the things that fascinated me about teenagers, you look in other animals, and they don't really seem to go through the same process. They do go through a juvenile stage, but the teenagers in humans, they're so fascinating because they're just this, I describe them, sort of constellation of events that all sort of link together and make this strange thing, which is a teenager. And obviously there's all the changes you'd expect, all the changes of puberty and the things that make boys and girls different. But there are lots of other things going on in there. There are huge changes going on in the brain and in human psychology, language changes. Obviously there's the start of sex and romantic relationships. There's just really so much going on. One of the weird things that sets us apart from other animals is we have this very dramatic adolescent growth spurt as well, which you don't really see so much in other creatures. So they're really unique in the animal kingdom.
Well, what's so fascinating about your perspective on the teenage years is that you say they are critical to our success as a species, whereas I think most of us, at least most adults, look back at that time as that's just something you want to get through to get to the other side.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because since I've been talking to people, since the book came out, half the adults I talked to say, oh, being a teenager was terrible. And the other half, like me, it was one of the best times of their life. They had a great time. There's really two lines of thinking that make us think that they are absolutely crucial. The first is really, it is circumstantial evidence, but it comes from the fossil record, which is that over the last sort of few years, we've actually been able to work out how old people were at different stages when they died and formed fossils over the last few million years. And effectively what we do is, it's not that similar from working out how old a tree is. If you take a human tooth, and you saw little sections through it, look at it under polarized light, you can see little growth rings. And those growth rings, each of those corresponds to a certain number of days. So you can work out how old people were when they reached maturity. And so from that, we think that people probably used to be mature when they're about 9 or 10, and then suddenly it jumped to about 18 or 20. And that occurred between 3 to 500,000 years ago. And so that was really when the first numerical teenagers occurred, the first humans who, you know, were still immature in their second decade. And almost immediately after that, the human brain made its final great leap to Homo sapiens size. For some reason, I always describe brains in terms of oranges. Australopithecus had a one orange brain and Homo erectus had a two orange brain. And soon after we evolved teenagers, we leapt up to the three orange brain, which really is the same as what we have today.
That's fascinating. You're saying that we could not become the human beings that we are today without that long period of adolescence. I mean, specifically those teenage years.
Well, yeah, that's obviously the circumstantial fossil evidence. But if you actually look at what goes on in teenagers, and this is another thing we've only been able to do quite recently, is obviously now we can do brain scans, magnetic resonance imaging scans of living human people without doing them any damage. We needed to invent that to be able to look at the next stage of the story. But also, of course, the experiments take about 10 years if you want to follow individual teenagers through their teenage years. And when you do that, you find that this second decade of life, which humans have sort of tacked on fairly recently, there are lots of things going on, but there's very, very spectacular restructuring of the brain taking place. The brain actually gets smaller between the ages of 12 and 20, and yet just think of all the things you can do at 20 that you can't do when you're 12. So many of the things we learn when we're teenagers and the pathways that we lay down, they really are the things that really make us uniquely human. I mean, admittedly, you can talk and you can walk on two legs by the time you're 12, which are obviously very important human characteristics. But so many of the other things, like the very complex language we use, our ability to handle abstract concepts and things like that, planning, long-term goals, all that comes when you're a teenager. And it seems to tie in, we're now beginning to tie this in, with changes that are actually going on in the brain, physical changes that you can see different bits growing during the teenage years.
Do you see the teenage years as basically preparation to become an adult? Is it the training ground to learn what we're going to do for the rest of our lives? I mean, if that were to happen too fast, we wouldn't be as smart in the end?
I think it does. Partly it just takes a long time because of the sheer size and complexity of the human brain and what it has to do. When I first started out in biology and doing research, I was working on animals, and I always had this sort of wishy-washy zoological liberalism about humans where I thought they were just another species. But the more I've worked on them, I've realized what utterly weird species we are. I mean, obviously we are just animals, but if you write a list of all the strange features of humans to do with the brain and reproduction, the way we move and language, we are extremely strange. And this huge brain we have, it's probably, I mean, most animals, you can calculate how big their brain would be from how big the animal would be. I mean, there's actually formulae to do this. And the human brain, by that argument, is about 4 or 5 times too big. So we've got this hugely powerful but potentially unstable brain. And I think it does just take that long to do all this reconfiguration. And then obviously there's the social aspect of human life as well, which is very, very complex, which you just kind of have to learn. And not that much of it is hardwired. I mean, I think the best example of that is at the beginning of a romantic relationship. The beginning of your first romantic relationship feels really strange because nothing, you just feel that nothing has prepared you for it. And I think the teenage years is just that sort of thing over and over again. And it just takes, well, 10 years or so.
Well, and there are also some very difficult aspects to these years. I mean, we all know that depression is a big problem for a lot of teenagers. There are a lot of teenage suicides. And I guess it raises questions about why those are such acute problems during this period.
There's two sides of this. I mean, you can either see, if you look at depression from the point of view of a mental illness, one of the most striking things about mental illnesses is most of them seem to start, whether they actually do start and have their roots, but they certainly seem to start in the teenage years, and that includes depression and anxiety and even schizophrenia often usually start in the teenage years. This is why it's so surprising that the early psychologists ignored teenagers so much. They're very interested in children and the effect they had on later adult behavior, but they largely ignored teenagers. That just seem to be a feature of mental illness in general. Depression itself is very, very interesting because there's certain things that happen that related to what we'd more generally call, what we colloquially call depression. One of the things you do learn is, remember I said that one of the things that humans learn to do that makes us so unusual is we analyze our own thought processes. And, you know, something goes wrong and you think about what went wrong and why it went wrong and how much it was related to you doing things wrong or whether it was just luck. And that's a very important part of being human. You have to be able to sit back and analyze your failures. And it just seems that in the teenage years, you're learning that skill, but teenagers, well, unfortunately, in a way, perhaps they get too good at it. And they spend lots of time thinking about their failures and seeing whether they reflect on themselves. And one thing that very noticeably happens in the teenage years is the incidence of clinical depression becomes much higher in girls than it is in boys.
We have to talk about two of the things that parents worry most about their teenagers, and that's sex and drugs. And you know, the temptation for a lot of parents is just to say, don't do it. Of course, teenagers seem obsessively interested in both those things. I mean, at least many of them are. Why do you think that is?
I think there is a slight difference here. I mean, obviously, teenagers don't have to do either sex or drugs, but obviously there's much more of an argument to say that sex is, at least to some extent, more natural teenage activity than drugs. I think the problem with sex is that by the time teenagers get to 20, well, of course, they wouldn't be teenagers anymore, but by the time our children get to 20, we want them to be sort of sexually confident and mature. And yet we want them to somehow get there without actually having any sex, which is a bit of a contradiction in terms. I mean, there's lots and lots of studies of what people think about their first sexual contacts, and some of them are negative and some of them are positive. The first thing I'd say at the beginning is that actually when you're a teenager, people often worry about the risks of being a teenager and what can happen to them. I think there's one or two things that, as long as you avoid them, actually being a teenager is a chance to make mistakes and, you know, then not really ruin the rest of your life. But I think the two things, obviously, as far as sex is concerned, that teenagers do have to be careful of is either getting pregnant or contracting one of the sexually transmitted diseases that stays with you throughout your life. So I think one of the messages that is very important to get across to teenagers is barrier contraception. The reason why I think that's so important is because so much, I don't know about in the States, but over here, so much of what teenagers hear about in the media and at school about sex is negative. It's about the fear of catching various diseases or the fear of getting pregnant. and so much of what they hear about sex is negative. And yet, of course, deep in their little brains, their program, or their very big brains, as we've just heard, they're programmed to kind of expect sex to be fun and interesting and enjoyable, which is very lucky because that's not what they're hearing about from all around them.
So knowing what you do about teenagers, do you feel prepared as your own children start to enter this age?
This is a very interesting question. And ever since I've written this book, people say, well, you know, my children are 6, 8 and 11. And they say, well, do you think this will make it easier to have your own children? And I would so much love to be able to say very confidently, oh, yes, it'll be so much easier. I've written a book. It's bound to be easier. I have to say, in my heart of hearts, I suspect that it probably won't make any difference to what I actually do or how difficult I find it. I think occasionally they may do things and I'll think, oh, I know why you're doing that. But I don't think it'll fundamentally change the way I treat them. And this is one important thing I felt when I was writing the book, is that I wasn't writing a self-help book, because the thing I found when I looked at teenagers from a sort of zoological point of view is that to some extent they are just incompatible with adults. And that's inherently how they're... Well, perhaps we should phrase it the other way around. Adults are fundamentally incompatible with them.
David Bainbridge is the author of Teenagers, A Natural History. He spoke with Steve Paulson.